Welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. APSATS is a nonprofit organization providing professional training and compassionate support to partners affected by problematic sexual behavior and betrayal trauma. In each episode, Dr. Jake guides a conversation of enlightening insights and practical tools to empower those affected by sex addiction and betrayal trauma to use their voices and live their values. The mission of Betrayal Recovery Radio is to offer hope to those in need of healing and growth to those moving through grief. And now, here's your host, Dr. Jake Porter.
Hello there, I am Dr. Jake Porter, and this is Betrayal Recovery Radio. Glad that you're here and tuning in today. You know, I have worked with so many folks who have been working to overcome the effects of sexual addiction, the effects of betrayal trauma, and here's one thing that I have not seen so far. Somebody do it alone. I haven't even really seen somebody do it with the help of just one person, one professional, one supportive partner, one coach, one therapist, one sponsor. It truly takes a village. And that's because the amount of support we need, the amount of encouragement we need, the amount of validation we need, the amount of perspective we need is not going to come from just one person very likely. And so much so is this the case that we're joined by our guest today who makes the claim that the unexpected gift of betrayal is often friendships. We're going to be joined by my friend, my colleague, Lachelle Burkett. Lachelle is the lead hope caster and founder of Hope Redefined. She desires to be a part of something so much bigger than herself as she continues to expand the reach of support for women who are facing similar things to her own recovery story. She and her husband, Garen, have five kiddos, and they've been on the road of recovery since 2006. And we're going to talk about betrayed partners and the relationships and the friendships that they form along the way as they seek to heal from betrayal trauma. If you are listening and you're unfamiliar with APSATS, the sponsor of this podcast, I just want to take a moment to tell you what we're all about. APSATS is the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists. And this is a premier nonprofit organization that seeks to both advocate for those who have experienced betrayal trauma and to train professionals who work with those who have experienced such trauma. To that end, there are several trainings that are coming up that I want to let you know about that you or someone you know may be interested in. Coming up later in the month of March 24th through 26th, is an online training called Restoring Truth. This is a disclosure guide training from the very wonderful Dan Drake and Dr. Janice Cottle. They are a terrific team, and they've done so much work on this topic of disclosure. So if you're a coach or a therapist, anyone who does disclosures, I encourage you to tune in to that training. Also, next month in April, on April 14th, Jessica Edens is going to be leading a training called Betrayed Families, Support for Children and Families. And that is also going to be live online. And the sort of foundational cornerstone training of APSATS is the Multidimensional Partner Trauma Model training that is offered a handful of times every year. The next offering of this training will be in June. That'll be June 13th through the 16th, again, live online. You can go to APSATS.org, that's APSATS.org, to learn about all of these really wonderful events. I do hope that all of you who are listening are going to get a lot out of this conversation with Lachelle. She's full of wisdom. She's funny. She's smart. And she's lived it, and she continues to live it now. She seeks to turn her life into something that is a blessing to others and help others as they try to find this pathway to healing after betrayal. And this conversation was really moving to me in many ways, inspirational to hear as she shares from her own story about how relationships were both unhelpful, we'll say that, as she started trying to find her way through, but then also how she found relationships where she was safe and encouraged and pointed in a direction toward healing. So with that said, I know you'll enjoy this conversation with my friend and my colleague, Lachelle Burkett. Lachelle, my friend, welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much.
Oh, good.
Great intro.
Well, yes. Clearly, everyone is so glad you are here for this episode. No, this is great. I'm glad to see you. Always glad to talk to you. Love you and your work that you're doing. And I think we're going to have a good conversation today. We talk about, you titled this The Unexpected Gift of Betrayal, Friendship. Mm-hmm. Yes. The Unexpected Gift of Betrayal, Friendship. So you have created a ministry, Hope Redefined, for women who are impacted by sexual betrayal. It's a community where they can find one another and find healing. Tell me how you've seen the benefits of having a ministry focused specifically on a woman's healing support and the healing of her relationships, including her marriage.
That's a great question. So it was a very intentional choice that I did make, as I felt like I was being called to start this ministry, was to stay focused on women. Mm. Part of my own personal story was the fact that when my husband's addiction came out, that there were so many resources, not a ton, but there were resources available for him. And there was very little, if anything, available or gifted to me. I definitely didn't have any person actually saying, hey, here's a book, or hey, here's a whatever. I do remember early on getting a hold of Marsha Means' book, and that was super helpful. But at the end of the day, it was the community that I was so desperate for. And in my own personal story, I remember trying to seek out safe relationships with others, and I was trying to find somebody who had maybe was like three steps ahead of me and was experiencing hope and overcoming a lot of the pain that was coming from my story. And so as I was feeling led to step into this and create a ministry, I had actually been, just so the listeners kind of know, prior to starting the ministry, I had been supporting women in a local small group for about 5 years. I had also got a chance to work with a woman named Vicky Titi, and I worked, I led her online groups for her. And I just consistently kept seeing these women so desperate for community. And in any form or fashion, they were like, I'll take it online, I'll take it as a phone call, I'll take it through email. And I knew that feeling, that experience of just that desperation of having other people get it. And that I don't have to explain every minute detail in an attempt to defend my pain or in an attempt to justify why I'm not okay. I could just come in and say, I'm not okay. And the group would know. They'd be like, we get it. We get why you're not okay. So I wanted to create that space for other women to be able to do that. And whether that's that they get to sit in group with me or another facilitator in our organization or with each other, that they're going to start finding that friendship that they just never anticipated. That's that unexpected gift.
Wow. That's so powerful. And thank you for sharing, and opening up about your own journey. And I'm wondering if you could share a little bit more from your own personal journey with friendships through your own betrayal story. And maybe what are some particular ways you've seen friendship shape and guide that, and how maybe even how you see the role of those friendships changing over the years.
Yeah. So when I remember I was a young bride-ish, youngish bride. And, but I was also a really young believer when my husband and I got married, and his addiction came out. He confessed to me about 18 months to 2 years into our marriage. And at the time, my community was a small group, married couple small group. So there were five other women in there with me and husbands or whatever. And then I had family. That those were kind of my two outlets of people. And so after his after he had shared what was going on, I'd gone to the small group, and we did in our small group, we'd break out in husbands and wives. And so it was just us wives sitting in this room. And I started sharing what was going on and how I didn't know what to do with it. And I remember I had one woman say, "Well, my husband and I watch porn together all the time." And I was like, I don't know what to do with that. Right. And then I had, so it internally, I'm starting to question, maybe I'm making a big deal about something that's not a big deal. Right.
Yeah.
Then on the next gal really didn't give me a whole lot. She just said she didn't have anything to say, and she just kind of shut down. I later discovered that her husband had multiple affairs on her in their marriage already. And so there was a lot of unhealth and not very much healing for her. And I think she just felt ill-equipped to be able to step into that with me. I remember another friend who just kind of very quiet, but just really sorry for me. She was so sorry for me. And while I appreciated her sorry, it also felt like pity. Like I got broken goods, and it was just too bad that that was, you know, the result of my relationship. And so I found myself floundering. I just didn't know where to go, and I didn't know who to talk to. And then I would find myself trying to share my story or my pain and overwhelming people. Right. You know, that look when you're like, and I'm so, one of my core values is authenticity. So like, if you ask me how I am, I'm going to answer that question.
You're
going to
tell us. Yeah.
And so I would be at church in children's wing, and someone would be like, "Hey, how are you?" And I'd be like, "I'm not okay." And I would just like give them authenticity. And then you see the big eyes and the slow back away, and I'll be praying for you. And then they never speak to you, you know, for months or whatever. And I realized I was just experiencing a new level of rejection. I'd already experienced this rejection from my husband, and now I was starting to experience rejection from my community because no one really knew what to do with me. And it was adding to the trauma and the betrayal for me of like, great, now I've not only lost this intimacy with my husband, and I was still trying to figure out what all that meant, but now I'm starting to lose friendships because either I'm too much, or somehow or another I'm damaged goods or whatever it looked like. Or for a lot of it though, it was even, I was talking about something that was actively happening in their relationship and they weren't ready to discuss it.
Right.
Right. So I was kind of holding the mirror up, and that was a hot mess. So it was a really important season. It was very hard. I'm never going to say it was easy, but it was an important season for me to come to terms with. Not all friends are created equal. And the best example I can give that, if I take it out of my betrayal story. So we have five children. My husband and I have five kids, and our youngest son is adopted. And I remember in the early days of even the idea of adoption, asking certain people and then realizing, oh, if they don't have any experience with adoption, they're not going to be very helpful for me. Right. So they're not going to help me with what is transitioning home look like, or what does, how do I, you know, make sure that my other kids feel just as valuable and important in our family? All the questions that come with basic adoption stuff. And so we began to create a circle of friends who were adopted parents. And that was vital for us. We needed those people in that particular season to do that. And what I became to understand, what I have realized, is that that's true in a lot of different ways. It was definitely true in my betrayal story. I needed to get in community with others who understood what I was going through. Mm-hmm. And I needed healthy community. I did experience some unhealthy community show up at the meeting. The women were just so broken and they're so hurt. And we didn't have a very strong facilitator at the time. And that woman did not have her own betrayal story. So it kind of felt like you're being led by a blind shepherd, right? She didn't know where she was taking us. And that was super hard. And
yeah,
but you know, it was just such an invaluable experience for me to eventually find healthy, safe community that could let me heal and be right where I was.
You know, this is something that a conversation I find myself having pretty regularly with couples, with betrayed partners, when I work with them or do some consultation or whatever. And that is, what is healthy community? You know, what are some of the marks? And what I'm hearing you say, I just want to reflect it back to make sure I'm hearing you right and let you expand on any of this if you want. But I'm hearing, number one, it's people who you don't have to defend yourself to them. You don't have to put on airs around them. You don't have to like overly contain or hide parts of your own story, what you're going through. Probably because they've been there as well. So they get it in an experiential sort of way. But you also just talked about making sure that the person who is facilitating or leading this group has some, whether it's on the job training, you know, through life experience of their own or formal training, that they get the partner experience.
Yes.
Otherwise it's not very helpful. Yeah.
Right. 100%. I think having a healthy facilitator is a must. And I will say that I think that we as women have an intuition. We can tell you when it's healthy and when it's not. You know, I think that healthy facilitators are not always going to tell you what you want to hear. They're going to give you truth and
right.
love. And I think that's super, super important for us as we're trying to heal. But also a healthy facilitator is not going to tell you how to do it. There's a real distinction there, right? And that's always a kind of a flag that I've encouraged women to consider when they're talking about looking for like local community. It's like, hey, if you're stepping in there and you've got women in there who are telling you how to do your recovery, that's a problem. Like that is them taking ownership for something that they're not a part of. And they're attempting to try and force their agenda on you and assume that their recovery story is the way that recovery happens. And that is not true, right? We're individually created and our stories are very independent of each other. And the things that are important in my relationship are going to be very different from another couple. And so I can't necessarily take on this woman's template and do it just like she did.
Right. And so there's a balance there. On the one hand, having that personal experience, that knowledge is an asset, but it could also become a hindrance if someone thinks, well, this is how I did it, so this is how everyone's going to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I know, you know, because I'm in recovery and I work with addicts and it's very similar parallel on, you know, on this side of things, right? Like it's helpful to have that experience and I can't impose that. And I think, I mean, here you and I'm about to pat us both on the back here. It takes great maturity to be able to walk that line and discern that. Yeah.
Agreed.
And one other thing about healthy community that I say, and I'd love to get your take on this and, coming from a place of understanding the neuroscience of trauma, When we get triggered and we stay in that heightened and triggered state, we're actually reinforcing those traumatic pathways in the brain, right? And so healthy relationships, healthy community can meet me in my trauma and pull me into regulation. Sometimes, and this can happen again for both a betrayed partner, but also in an addiction support group, people get triggered, they get in there, get activated, and the support group just feeds it and help, you know, you're right, just kind of keeps throwing fuel on it, which is really damaging their brain more, right? It's keeping them stuck in the trauma. And so being able to have a group, enter into a group that can meet you there and bring you back into safety and grounding. And that is so important.
It's about, yeah. And that is part of the gift, right? Is getting into that healthy community. We talk some in our group for wives, we talk about attunement and how part of what we're getting to do as we're sitting together is I'm suddenly seeing you be upset about something that's true in my story. And I'm going, oh, I can be sad about that. I don't think I ever really connected that. And it allows us to be in that space of seeing it in another person's story. And you know, that's one of the beautiful things about community and the friendships that come from this is you know, we tend to have women who they come in all shapes and sizes, which is what I love. But if I was going to categorize some of them, I will typically get women in group who are so avoidant of their emotions that they will actually claim that they're allergic to them. Right? They're like, I do not want to feel my emotions. I'm allergic to them. And of course I know, you know, it's part of it is just them. That's part of their survival is if I don't feel any of this, then I don't have to move through it. And then you have other women who are saying, I'm so dysregulated. I don't know how to function. And it's actually really cool to see these two types of women and experiences get in the same space because they start to balance each other in a place of health. Like if it's allowed, that woman who's so avoidant of emotions, she's hearing her story in a woman who has emotions. And she's suddenly recognizing, oh, it is appropriate for me to be sad about this. It's okay for me to grieve. Okay. Now she still might have to wrestle it out with herself and let herself go there. But being able to see that in another person is the gift that she's getting. On the other side, the woman who's generally, you know, really triggered, pretty dysregulated, struggling to function, she's starting to see some of that strength in this other woman and go, oh, I want some of that. Like, and it's not that she doesn't want to feel detached necessarily from herself, but there is a bit of a detachment that gets to happen in the relationship. Like, this isn't personal. Like, watching a woman come to the understanding that her husband's addiction is not personal, right? Yeah. It gives her a new sense of freedom of being like, I can heal regardless of what he chooses to do, and I can detach in that healthy way in order to let us both heal. So,
That's good. So, a lot of women. I mean, I've seen betrayed partners who they know in their gut right away, they've got to find a tribe. They've got to find a group of women. And then I've also worked with betrayed partners who are a little more resistant, right? And so in your experience, what are the biggest fears for a woman who, you know, maybe there's this part of her that's like, I know I need to do this. I know I'm feeling lonely, but you know, she's just also got these fears about joining a support group or joining a community. You know, what are the fears that you see, and how do you help women navigate those fears? How do you meet them there and help them walk through that?
Yeah. So some of the biggest fears I hear is they don't want to cry in public. Mm. Like they don't want other people to see them cry. Here's how I help them with that. I consistently say as a group facilitator, we don't apologize for tears. They're actually cleansing the soul. There's absolutely no reason. We're also a faith-based organization. And I talk about that's a language that God understands.
Mm.
And so there's no need for us to apologize for that. But I'm also not going to push her to a place where she feels forced to cry. Like that's just cruel and unusual punishment. So, but I think it's allowing that to be just a normal. It's not a good or a bad. It's just, it's normal and expected and appropriate. Other fears I hear from women, you know, unfortunately we've been hurt by women. And for a lot of us in our betrayal story, there was other women as a part of the story. And so the idea of putting myself out there and being around yet more women is just really, it feels dangerous. And I think it's important for us to be looking for tribes that we feel connected with, that those are my people. I can feel real and authentic with them. And and that would be my encouragement is to just keep looking for your people. There's so many varieties. And that's what I love about our community as it continues to grow. It's like, you know, there's so many different types of group leaders. There's so many different types of styles that people are leading groups. It's like, find your people.
Yeah.
So, and the one other thing I'll say is, the fear, one of the biggest fears I hear from women is, I don't want to keep rehashing the past. Right?
Yeah.
They're just terrified that they're going to come sit in this group and all we're going to do is pick on our belly buttons and woe is me. And, you know, it's just was there a song when we were kids about sitting in a garden eating worms? It was like a big sad day. And, you know, and I can totally empathize with that. Like, who would want to go to that group? It's terrible. However, I think that it's a misunderstanding of what good, healthy recovery looks like. Because
for sure,
yes, there is a time and a place to look at the history and what's happened and give ourselves permission to think, you know, to really assess the impact. But then there's this moment that you get to shift and go, okay, what does tomorrow look like? Because of yesterday, what will tomorrow look like? And then that's where the real gift comes from being in community, is being able to see each of us in our own little place of we're focusing on future. And it's not like future with blinders on. We're not just like having a bunch of hope and, you know, that it'll just magically get better. It's like realistic. And it's women being able to say, my daughter's wedding's coming up and I am terrified because I'm afraid that the sanctity of marriage is ruined for me. And I don't know how to do that. And her being able to have another woman in that group going, I've been there. Let me help. Let me tell you what I did, what went really bad, and just walk with her. Right. And then having that community of women just rallying around her in prayer and community leading up to that event. It's a game changer.
Absolutely. It so is. I just, yeah, this has been a theme, you know, as we've been working on this summit that's coming up, that we're doing, and also here on this podcast, you know, this has been coming up over and over. I found myself saying, I don't know how you do it without community. I hate to say things are impossible, right? But really, you know, I've worked with thousands of people in one way or another, in one format or another now. And I don't know how someone does it without finding that tribe of people to help move through the journey with them. So as you watch women, you know, enter these groups, begin to build these friendships, these relationships, and do that as they're moving through this journey toward healing from betrayal, what are some of the key things you see happen for these women and in these women as they do that? What do you observe taking place within their own hearts and minds and lives?
I think that the very first thing that happens for women when they step into community is the gift of validation. Suddenly they've got a story that they're able to tell, and other people are going, yes, I understand what you're saying. And there's just nothing like that. And having the gift of validation in community, we need it as a human race, I think. And one of the ways I talk about that gift of validation is actually in the process of grief. I really believe that grief is one of the first steps that women have to have in their own healing process, is they need to have permission to grieve. And the interesting and unfortunate part about betrayal trauma is most of us isolate once this happens. And so no one is sitting around me saying it's okay to be sad, or you're right, this is a loss, or absolutely, this is not how this was supposed to go. We're very much by ourselves, or the woman is very much by herself. And so she's wrestling with herself, trying to, the saddest phrase and the most common phrase I hear is, I just need to get over it. You're like, that is so much of us trying to squash down the reality of our story and just trying to force ourselves into the next. And so that's one of the things I see as a gift in community, is that validation, that permission to be right where you are, and that you're not doing it wrong. That's the other question I get all the time is, am I doing this right? And I go, are you doing it? Because if you're just doing it, then you're doing it right. Right?
Oh, I like that. I like that. That's so good.
There's no like formula here, but we are so worried about, well, what if I'm not doing it? And you know, I even have women who will talk about like their husbands are in men's groups, and the husband will come back and go, well, such and such's wife is blah, blah, blah. And she's like, am I doing this wrong? You know, because she's so not, she just doesn't know. And we get to come back and go, no, you're doing okay. You're just doing you. And that's all right. Yeah.
Well, that illustration there about the husband coming home, that brings up something I was thinking as I'm listening to you talk about them getting validation from other women in the groups. And one of the reasons I think that it's so important is because, you know, a lot of these betrayed partners, they want the validation from their husbands.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what they really, really want, and understandably why, and they deserve it. And the reality may be, it may be a while before he's able to do that in an effective way. Or even if he does it effectively, it may be a while before she can take it in and receive it and trust it, understandably. And so having other people, right, to give that validation is so important. And the same is true for that matter for the addict. You know, I mean, it just blows my mind that a guy can, you know, cheat on his wife for 30 years and then want her to throw him a party when he gets a 6-month chip. You know, yes. Go get your attaboys from your boys in the support group, right? Because like you said, this is a human thing. This is a human need. Yeah.
I mean, we're designed for community.
Yeah.
And so it gives us that. It's a gift, even though it is one of the hardest things I think I've ever done, is how to make friends. Like I didn't get that book about making friends when it was adulthood. I was like, this is terrible. Like, how do you make friends? And, you know, and unfortunately, I mean, we do talk about we're in one of the coolest clubs that we never wanted to be in, right? Like, we've got great friendships. Yeah.
We do. I mean, it's incredible people. Yeah.
Yes. And that's the, I mean, again, it's the gift of friendship. It's a common experience that while it is hard and tragic, it also knits us together in a way that other things in my life cannot. Like, I do not feel this way about the parents that I sit next to at my kid's basketball game.
Right.
They've been on the same team for however many years. Like, it's not the same.
Yeah.
This is a depth. And, you know, we say in our ministry and our community a lot that, you know, healing happens in deep waters.
Mm.
And that is true about this too, is like our friend, those relationships are deep. I don't know half of the high level things about friends from my betrayal community, like that maybe you should. Like, I might even know their kids' names. I don't even know what street they live on. I don't know any of the basics, but I know the depths of their soul. Like, and I can tell you their identity about who they are, their value systems, what's important to them. And that's the other thing. I think you'd ask the question of what is the gifts of that community is it's a different level of accountability.
Yes.
There's nothing like sitting in a meeting in a group with a woman and I'll give you a perfect example. Last night we were sitting in a group and a woman who I bet she's in her late 60s. And so we were just doing a check-in and she just shared, she said, you know, I just had a really hard week. She goes, I keep staring in the mirror at this ugly old woman who is no longer lovable. What do I do with her?
Oh my gosh.
I know. And the whole group of us women just sat there and not one of us said anything. And I said, I'll make her name up. Pam. I said, Pam, why do you think no one's answering you right now? And we just all looked at her and several of them were smiling. And I know that sounds weird. And she goes, because it's not true. And we went, yeah. Right. And every one of us pulled her back into a place of truth in our own way of being like, no, you don't get to, you're not going there because we know who you are and we see your beauty. And so that's the gift of that too, is just having these people see you for who you are.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. Wow.
How do you do this in your ministry in Hope Redefined? Because I'm just going to be real blunt. Sometimes it doesn't work, right? I mean, there are groups out there. I've been a part of them. I've heard from clients who are a part of them. You know, not every group sticks or takes or forms or, you know, these bonds don't just happen because you sign up for a group together. So what do you do in your organization to really help foster these relationships and build these friendships among the women who come together?
Well, there's some intentional things that we do. Like, we have group agreements and some of the basics that are necessary, like confidentiality and how we're going to show up for each other in the group. We have agreements like that in the beginning. But the other thing is we have a lot of different ways for them to connect. So we have our online community and it functions a lot like a social media platform, but it's on its own. It's not attached to social media. And that gives women that opportunity to share, support each other. That's encouraged. It's highly encouraged that women are supporting each other. you know, we're careful. We're watching what's being shared to make sure that it feels healthy and safe. But, you know, that's one of the things that I love about this ministry work that we get to do, is being able to lean into each other and learn from each other. Just because you're brand new in the journey doesn't mean that you don't have something to offer.
Absolutely.
Right. There's been times where women have discovered brand new things that are on the market that I have no clue is even happening. And I'm like, oh, tell us about that. And her being able to feel like she's contributing, even though she's kind of a newbie. I will say too, I think it should be said that I'm a bit of a golden retriever. And so that doesn't hurt that I just assume everyone's my friend. I didn't know that we weren't. Until you tell me we're not, we're friends. And so, you know, and so I get to do that with a lot of women. And then I have a tendency to kind of cross connect women and do that for them. And I love that about what I get to do in my work. But you're right. It doesn't always stick. And like I said, I'm not going to be everyone's cup of tea. My facilitator style won't work for everyone. However, I think that, my encouragement would be, and I know that, APSATS isn't necessarily a Christian organization, but I would just be like, I would be praying for the Lord to bring you the community you need to find the healing and hope that you deserve.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's out. I mean, I want to say that to anyone who's listening and you're thinking like, yeah, I tried that. I was in one of those. It didn't work. You know, here I am. I'm still on my own. Don't give, like, keep looking. It's worth it, right? It's worth it. And there are as many different types of groups and personalities and facilitators and experience and backgrounds and options for how to meet and when to meet. They're out there. So
yeah,
don't give up. They're out there. Yeah. Now, you guys are also now doing like an intensive retreat. So not just your ongoing groups, but you're doing an intensive retreat. Tell us about that and the types of relationships and community that's being cultivated there.
Sure. Yeah. So we do a 4-day retreat, an intensive healing retreat is what we call it. We host it outside of Gatlinburg, Tennessee, or Knoxville, Tennessee. And we get to do them twice a year. The retreats are actually pretty small. We max them out at 12 women. And we also have a volunteer team that comes in and serves alongside our participants. And so it's usually a 1-to-1 ratio. So for 12 women, we'll have 12 volunteers on our team. And that's because we do a lot of individual ministry time. We're doing some prayer work. We're doing different activities. And so we want them to have a support person the whole time that they're there. It's not like they're suffocating, though. It's a promise. We're cool. We're cool. And, that is also a place that I see deep, true friendships birthed, is in experiences like that. Cause it's a shared experience again. Like nobody, you know, they meet each other as they come to this retreat, and all of a sudden they're going, I need to stay with these women. Like, they get me, they've heard my story. They've watched me move through the various parts of this retreat. And so as a part of our retreat, not only the cost of it covers the 4-day intensive, it also covers a 6-week aftercare group.
Oh,
so
wow.
As these women go back to their homes, because that was part of what we wanted, was we didn't want it to just feel like this like mountaintop experience.
Yeah.
We weren't looking for just an experience. We wanted this to be transactional and long-term. And so having the 6 weeks post group allows them to take some of the things they feel like they've learned or gained from the intensive back home, and then still be in that safe community to process, like, hey, I'm doing boundaries and my husband's blowing his top about it. What do I do?
Wow. Yeah.
And other having that support system there. So
that's so good. That's wonderful. And you know, I'm going to mount a soapbox, if you'll permit me for just a moment.
Absolutely. Go for it.
Something that's been on my stovetop cooking on high for a little while here recently. And it's this reality that has been assumed. I mean, for as long as I've been doing this work professionally, now a decade professionally, the assumption is the bulk of the resources go toward the person with the addiction or the person who did the betraying. Right.
Yes.
And then, And then the betrayed partner kind of what's left, that's what they get, if anything. And so I do mostly work with couples now, almost exclusively. And something just like invaded my mind a few months back. And it's like, why do we just assume that that's the status quo and that's the way it's going to be? Because the reality is, I believe that when you have a partner who is not getting the kind of care you're talking about, who isn't getting the resources to go and find these communities or work with a coach or a therapist or go to these healing intensives, these retreats, that's not good for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's not actually helping the addict either. If he's doing right. all this work, but his partner, his wife is there in untreated trauma, you know, still very much stuck in the wound of what happened, that's not good for anybody. And I guess what I'm doing right now is I want to advocate for partners out there. And especially if you're the addict, you're the one with the addiction, you're the one who did the betraying, and you're hearing this right now, send your wife to this retreat that Lachelle's talking about, or let her pick one out. You know, tell her, no, this, your care is as important as my care, and your care is my care, and vice versa, you know, and make it happen, because it is transformative and it is essential. And I will now dismount the soapbox. Sorry.
Well, and I will speak to that really quick. It is part of one of the pillars of our organization is we have a scholarship fund, and it is exactly for that reason. So we know that that is the reality for many, many couples and situations. We also know that oftentimes this comes accompanied with some sort of financial betrayal or job loss or even incarceration. I mean, there's just a lot of implications that come from this type of addiction. And so because of that, that is one of the things that was super important for me. So we have a scholarship fund and women can apply to that. Our board is incredibly generous and are always wanting to get women the help that they need. And we apply those funds to groups, coaching, the retreat, our online community, like wherever women are needing that kind of support that best fits yeah. them. And so but you're absolutely right. It's typically, it does seem like it comes in as an afterthought. And I think that part of that is because in the beginning, I think each of us, I can speak for myself. In the beginning, when my husband said, I did this thing and I'm never going to do it again, I believed him. And I was like, cool, never going to do that thing again. That's good. And I really never thought that this was going to be a lifelong journey. Right. So in the beginning, I was very much an advocate and I could cheerlead for him. And I was like, go to your group. You're awesome. And then it was after that first relapse that I was like, what's going on here? This is not how we were planning it. Right. That's not what you committed to. And
right.
I generally, when I share, you know, talk about my story, I would say that after the first relapse was when trauma really set in for me. Because the first initial was kind of like, I think I still had a lot of grace for him and a lot of empathy, like, but we were still newly married. Like I don't think I would have felt that way if I'd been married 30 years, by the way. I think I would have had a lot less grace. But because I was a young bride, I had some element of grace there and wanted to advocate for him. And then eventually was like, what is going on? And that's when I really did need the resources and support. And I encourage any caregiver, pastors, therapists, others, like, you know, there's nothing that can be done. I love working. I have a lot of great relationships with therapists, and they refer often into our groups because they understand the value of community, and they get to see their client come back. And she's had an opportunity to process maybe some sort of tool that the therapist gave her. She's now had this community go back and work it out with. And then she's coming in and she's making huge strides in therapy because she's getting all this other support in group. It's amazing.
That's right. Yeah.
So I agree. I'll get up on that soapbox with you.
Okay? Good. There's fight plenty of women, room.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fight for your women because they matter.
Yeah. They do
matter. And they're the ones who are staying home and doing childcare and handling life while you're at three groups a week.
That's right. That's right. And so, I mean, you're being much more gracious than I am by saying fight for your women. I want to say man up, Man up. It's your turn to find the free or low cost program, because you'd still need to be working it. And then you redirect those resources and you send her to whatever she wants or needs, you know? And, let's make this a little more equitable. All right.
Yes.
Now one of your newer projects you have going on, newest things you've started, I think, is this podcast. You're a co-host on a podcast, Hope for Wives, and there's three of you co-hosting this together. And so, I mean, what I see there is you are continuing to practice what you preach, what you've been preaching here on this episode, right? Of developing friendships and being in community. You're walking the talk as well, you know, through what I imagine has been, you know, some unexpected friendships there. Can you, so talk a little bit about that podcast and your vision for it and the three of you who are doing it, share that with our audience.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I get to co-host that with a woman named Bonnie Burns, and her organization is called Strong Wives. And then Pam Blizzard, who her organization is called Recovering Peace. And it really just kind of came together. It was Bonnie's dream to do a podcast, and she just happened to invite me, and I was like, yeah, sure, let me know when it happens. And the next thing I know, we're podcasting within a week. And I was like, this is crazy. So, but it's really neat. We each have very different stories, very different betrayal stories, very different healing journeys. We make up three different generations. Pam's in her 60s, Bonnie's in her 50s, I'm in my 40s. And I think that creates a really nice nuance to the way that we tell our stories. I've also experienced a good portion of my betrayal story happened with young children. The others did not have young children with it, you know, so it's like we've just had such a great variety. But each of us are professionals in our own right. But all of us went back to school and became professionals because of our stories. Wow. And so we love it. It feels like we're just sitting around having a cup of coffee and talking about a topic that we would love to equip women with. But also, we've had a lot of men comment on this podcast and talk about how helpful it is to hear it from a partner's perspective. And that's been kind of fun to hear, to get some of those emails and comments about how they really appreciated hearing some of the different perspectives that were presented there. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That's great. And I mean, I'll just let our audience know, and I really mean this, I'm not being flattering or whatever, but Lachelle, Bonnie, and Pam, that's a power team right there. Let me tell you, that's a power team. That's a lot of wisdom coming together. And so I really want to encourage all of you watching or listening to check that out. Well, Lachelle, tell folks how they can get a hold of you, how they can find out more about you and Hope Redefined.
Yeah. So you can find the podcast on most of the podcasting platforms. I'm not very good at that marketing part. I know it's on Apple and Spotify, but the website is hopeforwives, forwives.com. And then to find out about our organization and ministry, it's called hoperedefined.org. hoperedefined.org. And you can also email us at support@hoperedefined.org. We've got an incredible team. It's a small team. There's not a ton of us, but you'll probably get an email back from KK, is our executive assistant. And she does all of our entry conversations, really trying to help you find the right recovery platform for you. So she'll do an intro call with you. She'll kind of get an idea of what you're looking for, what feels safe for you. And then maybe make some recommendations like, hey, this group's getting ready to start. Maybe that would be a good fit. Or, I mean, and we refer out quite often. If we're not a good fit, that's another part that I love, is collaborating with so many to be able to say, hey, we can't do that, but I know who can. And be able to share those great resources. So we'd love
to. That's excellent. Yeah. Well, Lachelle, thank you so much for coming on Betrayal Recovery Radio. Thank you for being here. I'm a huge fan of you and all that you do.
Thank you.
All right. You take care.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS. If you've received help or hope from this episode, I encourage you to share it with someone you know. If you've not yet done so, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite listening platform. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Jake Porter, and you can always email me directly at jake@appsats.org. I'd love to hear your ideas, questions, or comments about the show. Until next time, keep choosing to use your voice and live your values. It's good for you and for this world.